Stuff Just Read It podcast.
Marcus Smart is so good. Hayden. Brown.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit podcast presented by CelticsLife.com. My name is Ben Vallis. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. Also joining us tonight, Jackson, aka Rickman Lives. Jackson, how have you been, man?
I've been well. It's nice to be back. I wish it was under better circumstances, but yeah, good. I know. Good, thank you. It's a great timing.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back. I mean, you picked a good 2 week stretch to be away from the podcast because it's been pretty dreary around here, but hopefully your return will also mean the return of good vibes and good on-court playing time.
I'm back in on it.
I'm glad. And of course, we've got our boots on the ground in the USA there. It's Larbird 33. Welcome back, sir. How's things?
Good. Not bad. How are you doing?
Can't complain. I can't complain. I will complain. That's what this podcast is partially about. Plenty to get to tonight. The Celtics obviously struggling at the moment. Who's to blame? What to expect through the second half of the season? We'll have that conversation again, plus Tatum and Brown are all-stars, and the Celtics Reddit recap coming up to round this one off. But first, Larbird 33. The Celts came out looking sharp tonight. I thought that the Jays had their sort of all-star air to them. Then they just kind of pissed the game away. What happened tonight?
We pissed the game away.
All right.
It's accurate.
That'll do it. Good night, folks. Piss the game away?
I thought I still think there's some encouraging signs. Kemba Walker, he actually had some big plays down the stretch. If you look at his play over his last 6 games or so, even if you include that game where you went 1-for-12 from 3, which was terrible against the Pelicans, His stats are pretty much the same as they were last year. I mean, he's averaging about 21 points, 42% shooting, 36% from 3. It's roughly the same. He seems to be improving, so that's a positive sign. The Jays are stars. But yeah, I mean, both of these games, disappointing. We obviously blew a huge one against the Pelicans. This one was a little more close. I feel like this could have gone either way. Our record's pretty much the same as Dallas, so I didn't really take this too personally, but yeah, I mean, obviously things aren't going great right now.
It was a weird moment because I remember watching in the bubble that game against the Mavs had against the Clippers. And when he hit that shot, I went absolutely wild. I was like, oh my God, that's like one of the most best things I've ever seen. Well, he actually hit a fucking identical shot, like the same circumstances again.
And two
of them. It just goes to show just how like generational and just awesome Luka Doncic is. And you can't hate on, you know, things like that. If he was like, you know, playing like James Harden, not to call anyone out, but like, you know, just, you know, in a way that, you know, is not, you know, aesthetically pleasing, I would be way more upset. But no, you can't do anything about that. It was good. But yeah, pissing games away, that's been a bit of a theme lately. We tried real hard to do it against Atlanta the second time. We successfully managed to do it against the Pelicans in some tremendous fashion. But I don't know if we like pissed the game away this evening. I felt like it was more or less a foregone, like it was following form basically in the fourth quarter, you know, just not being able to execute. And it was like, here we go again. But lo and behold, we got ourselves back into it. And then we just, you know, lost to a little bit of, magic. So it still sucks a lot.
Yeah. We had a good final 3-4 minutes or whatever it was. But the point is we had already pissed the game away by that point, in my opinion. But Larbird, it's interesting what you're saying about Kemba Walker, because I kind of walked away from this one thinking, well, Kemba Walker, it was terrible. And like, if you just try and think back to the game and sort of the memories that sort of flash into your mind, it's Kemba Walker bricking a lot of shots. But, you know, looking at his stats here, 8-for-19, so 42%, 4-of-11 from 3, and a +9 overall. Like, that's not that bad. And yeah, he did have that really good stretch at the beginning of the fourth quarter that kind of brought the C's back into this game after a pretty terrible third quarter. It's so hard with Kemba Walker. I really find myself seesawing on my overall perception of him and his longevity in this team, and can we or can't we win without him? I think a lot of the fan base obviously are also very divided on him as well. I'm just curious, you know, because the data that we have to look back on and how we formulate these opinions of Kemba Walker change frequently. There's games every day or every second day. Larbird, you kind of offered your thoughts there. Jackson, I'm curious to hear what you think. We haven't had you on in a couple of weeks. How are you feeling about Kemba Walker as sort of a long-term, and when I say long-term, I mean sort of 1 to 3 years or so with this team. What are your thoughts on Kemba in general?
It's been a bit of a roller coaster as of late because, you know, he came back from the injury and he definitely looked a shell of the player that we, you know, needed him to be. But, you know, you found he was getting better. He was improving. You know, it was a funny moment against the Atlanta game when we were in the midst of giving up that lead, or almost giving up that lead, I should say. And Kemba came back on and all of a sudden I just felt calm again. I just felt like, okay, cool. Like he's back, you know, these things are going to be okay now. And lo and behold, you know, it did get better. So that was a positive sign. I feel he's probably getting a little bit more of the scapegoat treatment. And that's, you know, at bottom, that's unfair. But at the same time, I mean, on the overall, like you think about what you want to see from this team. And, you know, like Jaylen Brown's been delivering. Jason Tatum doesn't feel like he's been delivering, but look at his numbers and he's been enormous. So Kemba, you expect to have like a similar level of production. And even though the numbers kind of, you know, suggest that he is, you just feel like he's still not where he needs to be. So as far as like long-term is concerned, I think, you know, his health is going to deteriorate, or is going to become less reliable, probably, to be more optimistic, you know, as the years go on. And if there's a trade to be made, if someone would take him off our hands, then I think, you know, that would be the popular consensus. But he's still got a lot. I still feel like he's got something to offer this team. And, you know, and I thought he was pretty good in the playoffs too. So I don't think it's time to throw him out. But I feel he's getting a little bit of scapegoat treatment now that Jeff Teague has been banished to the shadow realm of the DMP list. So somebody's going to take the blame. So I feel like Kemba gets that, probably based on his salary more than anything else, but still.
Yeah. Now, La Bird, I know you are kind of on the other side of the fence where you know, I've seen you posting on Reddit. We obviously have our Slack chat as well, where you're like, he'll come around. He's shaking rust off. How long are you going to give him to shake off this rust? And at what point do you start to, you know, turn the corner in terms of your idea of Kemba Walker's ability to have a positive impact on this team?
So I feel like we're going to be covering some similar ground that we've kind of talked about in previous episodes. But with me, I think you have to really separate. There's two things. Like I've been in support of trading Kemba even before I found out about the knee injury, just because of how he fits alongside the Jays. I mean, the short version is I think we brought him in to fill the role that Kyrie had as our number one scorer. And then once Tatum and Brown took a leap, we didn't necessarily need that anymore. We need someone who complements them. So from that standpoint, anyone who wants to like come up with trade ideas or say that we need to trade him for, you know, someone who positionally fits better as like, you know, another wing who can spread the floor and play solid defense, totally support that. It makes sense to me. It's nothing personally against Kemba. I just think it makes sense. But then there's the other side where there's people who, and I do disagree with this, which is the folks that say he's like, he's washed up, he's done, he's toast, you know, he'll never get back to where he was before. I just don't agree with that. And I think part of it, honestly, is I feel like people are, it's hard, you know, no offense to Kemba, but I feel like people are overrating what he actually ever was. You know, his season before he even came to Boston, like they have this vision of him as being this superstar player. He averaged like 26 points, but he did it fairly inefficiently, 42% from the field, or actually 43, and you know 36% from three, on a bad team that was under 500. I mean, he wasn't a great player. He was a good player, you know, a fringe star player, or a low level all star. And then last year, I mean, if we're comparing him to last year, I mean, let's compare him to last year. Last year, he started his first month of the season shooting under 40%. That continued on into December, where he shot around 41%. He did eventually kind of get in a groove for a couple months, and then he kind of fell off a cliff, you know, whether it was because of his knee or what. But I mean, his post, I'm pulled up real quick here, his post All-Star stats, averaged 14 points. He averaged 14 points on less than 40% shooting, 33% from three. He's been kind of not great for a while. So yeah, he showed up this season coming off a treatment to get some stem cell injection into his knee. Supposedly he's no longer in pain. Obviously he showed up and he was a shell of himself as he was working himself back into shape. But you know, look at his play over the last six games, and it's roughly the same as Kemba's always been. And I know people are going to say, you know, if you look at his stats and attacking the basket is 2%, you know, shots at the hoop, they might not be as great. But I mean, overall, I mean, he's still Kemba right now. If you just look at the last six games, I'm going to pull up the stats real quick right here. Last six games, 21 points, 3.8 rebounds. Last year, 20 points, 3.9 rebounds. Shooting percentages last year, he was 42.5%. Last six game, 42.4%. And his three-point shooting has actually been better over the last six games in spite of that terrible, terrible 1-for-12 performance. He was actually shooting 40.7% over the last six games. So, I mean, he's roughly the same. I think that it still goes back to the original argument, though, which is that as a positional need, I don't know if he's really ideal. Like, his assists have gone down. Because now we have guys like Tatum and Brown who are actually trending upwards in their assists. Tatum's averaged nearly six assists over the whole month, and Brown over his last five games has averaged over six assists. These are now our guys. These are the guys that should have the ball in their hands. They're the guys who are creating for everyone. And then you have Kemba, who's kind of filling this like third man, like, you know, off the ball type of guy. And that's just not who I think we need. So, yeah, long talk there, but that's my take on it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I understand the sentiment of like, yeah, maybe we're tracking back on some stuff that we've already discussed in prior podcasts, but like it's still a pressing issue. It's still a current affair, if you will. Like Kemba Walker is kind of this polarizing figure in that we pay him so much money and he's not really, you know, getting it done. But you're right, like he is statistically what he has always been. You had a pretty good post on this on Reddit a day or two ago titled Kemba is Kemba, and just, you know, and basically saying exactly that he is who he has always been. And there was a user, O'Hanrahans, who wrote, what made Kemba such a valuable player was his efficiency in the pick and roll. He can't pressure the rim the same way he could before, so he doesn't generate the same kind of spacing and passing lanes that he used to, which is interesting. And then, you know, I recommend checking out that post by Lara Bird and reading the full reply by O'Hanrahans there, but lists the percentile ranks of pick and roll in the last five seasons for Kemba Walker there. And you can obviously see that percentile rank drops off in the last few seasons or so. So I think that's another interesting way of looking at, you know, maybe the drop off for Kemba Walker. Yes, you know, generally speaking, he is the same Kemba that he's always been, but there are parts of his game that are maybe starting to peel away a little bit. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I also think that if you look at any stats of him, you know, going back to what I just said, where his post All-Star stats last season were pretty bad, I mean, that it directly coincides with the rise of Tatum and the rise of Brown. So, I mean, as those guys take a larger role, his stats are going to take a dive. But yeah, I mean, he's 30 right now. He's regressing, you know, he's regressing maybe a little bit, and he's still, I think, kind of working himself back into game shape. But people who want to just give him away for nothing, I mean, that's going to be, it's going to be a similar thing where, you know, Kyrie walks and he's now putting up freaking MVP level stats in Brooklyn. And now Hayward's putting up star stats in Charlotte. All the guys who were like, you know, we don't want them to trash. They end up putting up big stats. Terry Rozier's another one. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be the same thing. If we let Kemba just go for nothing, we're going to be like, God damn it, he made an All-Star team. Like, I would not be surprised to see that happen if he made an All-Star team.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have previously said on the show that I think the optics of trading Kemba would be bad. Now I think that he's clearly, and it's kind of reiterating what you guys have just said, that he's so clearly not a good fit for this team that I think a trade, you know, the optics are less bad in that sense, because I think sort of league-wide and NBA community-wide, it's almost like a semi-obvious move for the Celtics to make. Like, we tried, we love you, Kemba. Our guys love you. It's not working. It makes sense to move you. Like, I do think that it does kind of what we've seen over the last, you know, 14 games or whatever since Kemba's been back. It does open us up to a more of a frictionless trade scenario. But getting to the Celtics sort of more overall, and we went off on this Kemba tangent. We always tend to do it, but it is important. But looking at the Celtics as a whole, you know, it's fair to say that they have been struggling at both ends. I want to start with the defense here. Jackson, we haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks. Defensively, what do you see as the major issues for the Celtics?
Well, the easy answer, and I'm going to give the easy answer because I'm like that. We don't have Marcus Smart. I guarantee you at least one or two of the games that we've dropped over the last couple of weeks don't get dropped without Marcus Smart available. So that can't be understated. But I think, you know, the fact that we're now sub 500 and we've been hovering around 500 for, you know, the better part of, you know, of about a month now, I think it's just indicative of having a young, inconsistent team. You know what I mean? Like, there are some nights where we look you know, very competent, you know, particularly on the offensive end. There's not a significant jump on the defensive end that makes you think, oh yeah, they can do it on both nights. But, you know, sometimes the offense bails us out. And I think that just at the end of the day comes down to having a young team that just can't perform night in, night out. You know, Brown and Tatum can only do, you know, so much. And, you know, the, you know, our we can't defend threes. We can't, you know, really defend that well in the paint. You know, the shot blocking thing still hasn't particularly been answered, except for when Robert Williams is on the floor. But that's, you know, probably a whole argument altogether. So yeah, I think the defense is just really indicative of having a young team that's inconsistent, and also Marcus Smart being out. I think those two together, you know, play a huge factor.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Jackson said. Marcus Smart, obviously, if he had been playing over the last couple of games, that would have been a different story entirely, I think. You know, maybe Marcus would have went 1-for-30 from three and shot us out of the game. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, having Marcus Smart out there is a big improvement over some of the guys we're playing minutes to. So, yeah, it could have been totally different. And in general, I just think what you're saying is totally right, Jackson. I think we lack depth. I think having Gordon Hayward last season during the regular season was huge for us, and we don't have that anymore. And, you know, I've been trying to think about this thing that I kind of talked about last week, where it's like, you know, if you actually look at our roster that made a run to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, we still have all those guys. So why are we struggling right now? And beyond just like our rotations and like who we're, you know, throwing minutes to guys like Nesmith, who I think it's a positive. I think the other thing is just that in the playoffs, you can play Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum 40 plus minutes a night, and we probably will. I mean, everyone gets a big boost in their minutes when it counts, but you don't want to burn them out right now. So yeah, you're going to play them a normal amount of minutes in a regular season, and that means you have to give minutes to someone like Grant Williams tonight, who didn't do so well. It hurts. So yeah, I mean, I really do think that we have to do something at the trade deadline to, you know, even if it's just like, you know, if you add Marcus Smart, that's going to help. And then even if you just like play out the buyout market and get some veteran that can help a little bit off the bench, it would be a big improvement. Because right now, like we're relying on minutes of guys that aren't ready. And it's stuff is not working, but at the same time, seeing great progress from people like Robert Williams. I mean, I love seeing that. I mean, he's been one of the bright spots, and I actually want to see him get more minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great individual progress, you know, particularly for Aaron Nesmith. But going back to the defense, it is a concern that two of our 6th, 7th, and 8th men off the bench are rookies. And, you know, they're pretty good. Like, Nesmith has been quite good defensively. Peyton Pritchard has been pretty good all round, but they're rookies and you have to allow them more room for error. And there have been games, unfortunately, where they haven't been as impactful as perhaps we would have liked them to have been. You know, Marcus Smart, you add him to either that small group of people coming off the bench or add him to the starting lineup, and suddenly someone in our starting lineup goes back to the bench and they're one of the first off the bench. Just that one addition back to our overall rotation would make such a difference. And then getting back to the perimeter defense, like today, Jaylen Brown, like, we're trapping Luka occasionally, but also there's a lot of like Luka just getting to the rim, particularly in the second quarter, without us stopping the ball at all. He blew by Jaylen Brown a number of times, which is odd because while there's been some knocks on Jaylen Brown's ability to be a good team defender, he's typically a very good one-on-one defender. You know, at one point, Hardaway Jr. blew by Tatum for a dunk in the second quarter. And it does to some extent seem effort related because, like Bird, you mentioned, we do have a lot of the same personnel that we had in our playoff run last year, but that we just don't have the same, like, you know, pizzazz, for lack of a better term. And I think Marcus Smart, just his presence alone, plays a lot into that and our intensity there. Brad Stevens had a quote after the game. He said, "We're not as good defensively as we have been in the last few years. I think we've improved in that area so far this season, but I still don't think that we're where you want to be if you want to be good," which I think is accurate. And it's kind of, I don't know about you guys, but it's kind of typical of Brad Stevens. Don't you think, like, his post-game comments have become increasingly frustrating? Like, he's almost like a politician in that he says things without really saying anything. And at this point where you just want answers, like, you kind of wanted to be like, well, we fucked up. We don't know what we're doing. We've got a long way to go. We've got a lot of young guys who don't know what the fuck they're doing. You know, I don't know what to tell you guys. Like, you kind of want that honesty, and instead you're getting these sort of polished, media-trained answers from Brad Stevens. And they feel kind of repetitive and uninformative at this point. I don't know. Anything on Brad Stevens there?
I think that's just like indicative of coaches of certain kinds of personalities and whatnot. Like Bill Belichick's been, you know, is an obvious example, you know, you could draw parallels with, but he's just, you know, when you see him frustrated and yelling at the officials on the bench, you know, you kind of, you get a little rise out of it because, you know, it's not typical of the kind of guy that he is. And this is a big test for him too, because I mean, if you think about, I'd say you have to go back to, I mean, okay, let's kind of gloss over the 18-19 season, because I don't think you can put that on him. I mean, I obviously played some role, but we really haven't been like a disappointing underperforming team, probably going back to the first half of what, the 14-15 season, where we started off badly and then we went on this really big run and we ended up sneaking into the playoffs. And we haven't been out of the playoffs since then. And be getting better and better and better. So, you know, that one, you know, horrible Kyrie year and Gordon Hayward recovery year aside, there hasn't really ever been too much of like a regression from this team. And now we're seeing it, but I don't think that's his fault. You know, I think, again, it's the scapegoat mentality. You know, Jeff Teague's garbage and he's shit and I can't stand, blah, blah, blah. Or he's not playing anymore. Oh, well, Kemba's shit, blah, blah, blah. Well, he's not actually that shit. Well, you know, Brad Stevens is shit. It's reactionary for the most part, because I think it's to ignore everything he's done with his team so far would be silly. But I think, I know you asked me about his reactions to the media and I've gone this big tangent here, but I think the point I'm just trying to get at is this is a big, you know, test for him to like kind of steer us out of some adversity with some young guys. You know, we've gone from being, you know, seeing as like one of the favorites, we're now slipping back into, I guess, like the unfancy team. So I wonder if this underdog mentality might bring something out of him. But until we can really get some form going or we can get some consistency, I think we're going to continue to get these like these stoic, you know, unemotional perform responses from him, because, you know, A, that's who he is, but B, he's obviously got the shits. He's obviously not happy with what he sees. So, and this is just how he expresses it, I think.
Yeah, I think I'd probably echo a lot of what you just said, Jackson. I mean, it's important to remember that these last two games could have easily gone in our direction, and then maybe the tone of this whole conversation might be a little bit different. We, you know, we're still not probably saying we're on the way to a championship, but it wouldn't be so doom and gloom. So I mean, putting that aside, I do think that it is a personnel thing right now. I mean, I don't think it's really on the coach as much as it is just balancing the team that is dealing with injuries and not having any consistent veteran lineups he can go to quite yet, and playing Minnesota young guys. I mean, he's just kind of have to, I mean, I don't know what positivity would come from him being a full Phil Jackson right now and just calling out his players. But I do think you're probably right that a little bit of that is effort. I mean, it is effort, but I think a lot of that's, it's like a mental thing. It's just like when you start losing games, it's hard to get too up for this. So I you know, maybe Mark Smart comes back and injects a bit of, you know, bit of energy into everything and we start playing better, or maybe the team makes some kind of move to shake it up. But I feel like we need some kind of catalyst to get us going. Cause right now, I mean, they must just be thinking, we're under 500. We keep losing these close games, and it must just kind of get in their own heads.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, we can talk about the state of the team for another hour. That's what we did last week. That's what we did the week before. It seems like, for now at least, that the state of the team has stagnated and we are what we are, and we're roughly a 500 team. Let's get to a few moments of the game today, or tonight rather, if you're in the States, for the Mavs game. I've got a couple of missed notes here. So at one point, it was 65-60 in the third quarter, I believe, for what felt like a million possessions, and the Celtics could just not capitalize. I feel like this is a real moment where they kind of gave the game away, and I think the Mavs missed sort of 9 of 11 shots during that stretch. Well, it remained 65-60, so they missed all of their shots during that stretch, and the Celtics could just not capitalize on all of those stops and get ahead by even sort of 7, 8, 9, 10 points. I think if they had capitalized at that point and even been able to get one or two buckets during that stretch, the game would have turned out completely differently. That was a really frustrating point of the game for me. Any other standout moments from this game in particular for you guys today?
It just seemed like a classic, classic recent game of ours where Tatum and Brown are great. Kemba's all right. Nobody else really steps up. We get some decent minutes, I guess, from Thompson, some are bigs, but yeah, I mean, it just seemed like another one of those games where we're just lacking something to push us over the edge. The only real major comment I'll say is that I think it's easy to compare this to a couple seasons ago, but as far as I see, I don't. The big difference is 2 seasons ago, we had a disgruntled Kyrie Irving, we had a disgruntled Terry Rozier, we had Jaylen Brown unhappy with his role, Gordon Hayward obviously not too happy with his role. Everyone seemed to be not getting along so well. Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart were both kind of yelling at Jaylen Brown in possessions. I mean, it just seemed like a chemistry thing that was beyond just like not winning games. But this team right now, I don't really see that. I do see guys that for the most part seem to get along. You know, they're probably not too happy about winning, but it doesn't seem like we're in the midst of some massive meltdown. I just think that there, if we get some kind of catalyst or we make some trade or something happens, we could go on a freaking 10 game winning streak. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, I think that's in the cards.
Yeah, I mean, that's all it would take. Tristan Thompson, you mentioned up the top there, Larbert. I thought he was sneaky. I mean, not really sneaky at all. He was very assertively good today. Very, very aggressive, particularly on the offensive boards. I saw a lot of complaints on Reddit and Twitter, you know, during that stretch. I think it was in the sort of middle of the second quarter that he was being too aggressive. But like at one stage there, he was kind of the only one making an impact on the game for the Celtics. And I don't know, kind of coming around on Tristan Thompson a little bit, if not as an impact piece for this team, like at least, okay, he's showing something. We talk about showcase season all the time. Like maybe he's kind of tradable now. Like at least he's something as opposed to just a complete net negative who's hard capping our team. I was very impressed with him. Also the air ball shot that Tatum clearly touched at the end of the game there as it was going out of bounds. Like you could tell live, I was watching on my phone while at work. You could tell that he touched the ball. Like, and then he's acting like he didn't touch the ball and they go to replay and like immediately determine that he did. The whole thing was silly. I felt embarrassed for him. And, you know, it kind of like if you just either grabbed the ball or didn't touch it, then the game goes potentially a completely different way. I don't know. Just speaking of moments from this game, that irked me and made it harder to digest. It was already frustrating. And then that happened. And I'm not going to sleep tonight. I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Jackson?
Can't help you, buddy.
Sorry.
All right. Well, look, I mean, we could talk about all the terrible things about the Mavs game and the Pelicans game, but I don't think anyone really wants to hear about that. I think everyone sort of compartmentalizes these things and you know, either moves on or holds on to things or however it may be that you cope with things. And this is not a fan therapy podcast in this particular case, so we're not going to touch too much on that. Kungu NBA on Twitter, who's a great follow, by the way, wrote, Celtics are really just losing because they need Marcus Smart and one more reliable veteran on the wing. They just have to stick with it. There's really good basketball in there somewhere. And Reddit user LilG88 wrote, I think Marcus Smart and Romeo Langford will give this team a bigger boost than most expect. I've been seeing a lot of this on Twitter and Celtics Reddit recently. I feel like a lot of people are starting to overhype Romeo Langford, who's someone that, if you think about it, we haven't seen a lot of throughout his short career so far. And they're kind of building him up as this savior. And when he eventually comes back, you know, suddenly the team is in better stead. Do you guys feel that way at all, or are you on team Romeo is going to come back and save our season? Jackson.
You know, honestly, sorry, you just went to Jackson, but I just wanted to say that honestly, I keep legitimately forgetting he's a person that exists. it's the weirdest thing. Like this whole conversation leading up to this, thinking about what we could do with our roster, he never crossed my mind at all. And then you bring him up and like, oh yeah, Romeo, he could be good. It's like almost like that Doctor Who villain where if you like, if you're not like directly looking at him, you forget about him. Like I totally just keep forgetting that Romeo is a person, but yeah. Hopefully he can step in and be someone.
Yeah. I think that's probably mostly owed to the fact that he, you know, was mostly anonymous last season. Sadly, you know, we all saw flashes of it. I think because, you know, your senses are heightened when you've got guys on there that you want to do well. And, you know, after a little while, if they're not producing that, then all of a sudden they're trash and you never want to see him again, you know, see Carson Edwards, for example. But, you know, I think he could be still a bit of an X factor for sure. You know, well, he was the 14th pick, so he's got to have, you know, some level of competency to him. And, you know, that's what this team, you know, needs at the moment. So again, I think it's unfair to put the expectation on him because A, he's barely played at all. And B, he's coming off an injury, you know, people could look what happened when, you know, former All-Star Kemba Walker came off of an injury. Like, is Romeo Langford going to, you know, just wow us immediately? No. So I want to exercise a bit of caution with that one. But no, I think I'm prepared to back him. I'm prepared to believe in him. So if he comes back and he has any kind of positive contribution, that's going to be a major bonus.
So big Sham wow today. Sham Charania tweeted that the 2021 NBA All-Star reserves in the East are James Harden, Julius Randle, Zach LaVine, Ben Simmons, Nikola Vucevic, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, which is amazing, particularly Jaylen Brown making his first All-Star game. Jackson, is this all unfolding as you foresaw? Did you predict the Jays, both of them, Tatum and Brown, to become All-Stars? And how do you feel as a result?
Yeah, I'm stoked. I'm absolutely stoked, you know, particularly for Jaylen Brown, but, you know, Tatum as well, obviously. Jaylen's completely earned it. You know, I think it wasn't quite All-Star level last year, but this year he definitely has been. You know, the leap is evident, and, you know, he's, you know, it was Tatum one and Brown two. Now I'd say this might be a little bit, you know, of an overstatement, but like I'd say it's probably more like, you know, Tatum 1A, Jaylen 1B almost. So the fact that he made the game, I mean, it is going to be in front of, like, you know, nobody, and it's going to be this, like, there's already this stink about All-Star weekend. It's like, do we really need this? Should it really be happening and whatnot? So it's tainted from that respect. But I mean, for the guy personally, you know, it's a huge achievement. He's 100% earned it. And to be, yeah, I think we had two All-Stars last year in Kemba and Tatum. So was Kemba last year? He was, yeah. I got very confused for a second. So yeah, to be well represented again is nice. But yeah, I'm just stoked for Jaylen Brown more so than any others.
Yeah, youngest All-Star duo for the Celtics since Bob Cousy and Ed McCauley in 1952 or 1953, which is insane.
Wow. Yeah, that is.
A Reddit user, The Turtle One, wrote, "Whenever I see our record, I just remember that we have two young superstars in the making, and it's all good." La Bert, I know you sort of err on the side of optimism. Does this help? Does this help you sort of digest this season at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we said it before, but the hardest part of building a team is getting two All-Stars or multiple All-Stars.
Yeah.
Even harder to get them when they're young. And obviously, these guys are very young with many years ahead of them if they stay healthy. So I feel like we got that huge check mark. Boom, we got that done. So it's just, you know, it's just filling the roster around them. So yeah, it's great. I mean, those guys have been awesome. They're, I guess, probably they both kind of roughly play the same position, but it's like the most important position in the NBA. So yeah, we have an embarrassment of riches as far as our core top level talent. Then it's just getting some role players around them. I wanted just quickly, because as you were listing off the All-Star reserves, I actually hadn't looked at the whole list. You mentioned Julius Randle first, and that one just kind of made me a little bit, I don't know, a little annoyed, because like in the off season, I had proposed some trades, and like one of them was trading Kemba to New York for their cap space and a pick. And people were like, no way would I give up Kemba for cap space. And then another later on in the season, I said, could you potentially trade Kemba to New York for assets that could be rerouted to Houston as far as a James Harden trade? And I had listed off a few names, and one of the guys I listed was Julius Randle. And one of the comments I got back was, he listed off everyone other than Julius Randle and was like, yeah, I mean, this garbage return. And I said, what about Julius Randle? Isn't that like at least a piece? And he's like, no, he's garbage. He's completely worthless. And now he's an All-Star. So it's a little annoying. It's just quickly, just like how quickly we can change our opinions. And now it's like, literally it was like 2 months ago where someone looked at my trade proposal and just didn't even feel like it was worth acknowledging Julius Randle. And now here we are. And they're like, get rid of Kemba for nothing. And Julius Randle's an All-Star. And the Knicks are like a half game behind us. Very annoying.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. It's amazing what half a season will do, particularly in these weird COVID times. But yeah, I mean, shouts to Julius Randle, right? Like, dude is balling. I think he gets a bit of a bump there because he plays for the Knicks, and the league in general are like, finally, a good Knick. Someone that we can put in the All-Star game who belongs to one of our biggest all-time franchises. But yeah, would surely be fucking pretty nice to have Julius Randle on this team at this point in time. Jaylen Brown...
I was going to say my buddy Scott, who I did podcasts with before, He this has been a running narrative of him because he's a little less high on Marcus Smart. He's always complaining about how he passed up Marcus Smart for Julius Randle, or we passed up Julius Randle for Marcus Smart. We took Smart one pick ahead of him. So this has been a field day, you know, he's having a grand old time right now saying, see, I told you Smart can't even play. I love Smart. It's just the Julius Randle thing has been a little annoying to me.
Yeah, and Scott, what we're not seeing there is the Marcus Smart show on the Knicks or equivalent, right? Who knows what Marcus Smart will be doing on his own, healthy, with his own franchise. So I don't know how much I believe in their take, but I'm going to stand by it. Yeah, so I don't know. Not much else to say there. You know, they're both all-stars. They both played well. They both deserve it. And it really, it's a diamond in the rough as far as this season is concerned. Jaylen Brown was asked about it after the game today against the Mavs, and he said, I don't feel very much like an all-star because we are below 500. He says he has to do a better job of inspiring his teammates and says that the team has to find ways to win. This is the latest in a season Boston has been under 500 in 6 years, which is depressing. Anyway, we're going to take a very quick break and be back in a moment for the Reddit recap. All right, welcome back. This is the Reddit recap. And by the way, we are searching for theme music for the Reddit recap. So if you have suggestions, if you have a creative bone in your body and you'd like to submit an idea or a piece of music to us to use as the Reddit recap theme song, please do so. We'll consider it and use it if it's any good. And we'll give you a shout out on the next podcast. We're starting with a post from Reddit user F. Shoemaker, who wrote, the Celtics have played over 1,400 minutes together this season. They have 0 5-man lineups that have played 100 minutes together. Guys, I know basically this whole podcast, we've been sifting through, you know, the muck and trying to find reasons for optimism. I don't know. I feel like this is a pretty good, you know, it's been a crazy season with COVID, and I think a lot of teams are afflicted by this kind of thing. But I mean, surely fans have to consider this particular insight when sort of thinking about how to perceive this season. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I think the injury record probably is most indicative of that. You know, we had a stretch where we didn't have Kemba. We had a stretch where we didn't have Tatum. Now in the stretch, we don't have Smart. Brown was out for a few games too. So it's, you know, you expect to see, you know, players in there, you know, filling gaps and whatnot. So, I mean, if you want to look at it from a pessimistic perspective, it's like, oh, Brad Stevens doesn't have his lineups, you know, correctly. Like, you know, what's he doing? He's incompetent, blah, blah, blah. Or you could have a more sensible take. It's like, we haven't really had a chance to settle. We haven't really, you know, we don't have that consistency. And, you know, we're definitely like experimenting and trying to find the right lineup. And you would expect that. But I think it definitely, once we, you know, have that lineup that becomes like the closing lineup or the strongest lineup for certain situations, then we'll start to see that even out. I hope that's the case anyway, too. So, yeah, no, I'm encouraged by the fact that it's, you know, it's not convenient, but it's explainable, or it's on paper. It makes a lot of sense why the struggles are there when you see stats like that.
Yeah. Larbert, any thoughts?
No.
Well, let me elaborate on this post a little bit. So F. Shoemaker goes on to say, our most used lineup is Smart, Brown, Tatum, Tice, Thompson, which has played 94 minutes and 31 seconds. Number two is Walker, Brown, Tatum, Tice, Thompson, which has played only 65 minutes and 31 seconds. No other lineup has more than 30 minutes on the court, which is insane. They say, for context, 9 out of the 10 top teams in the league have at least one lineup with over 100 minutes. Brooklyn is the other for obvious reasons because of the midseason trade. Most have more than one, and most starting lineups are way, way over 100 minutes. So I don't know. It's kind of a relief, I think, to read this post. This is 4 hours ago as of recording this podcast. Just like, okay, all right. Like, you know, there's room for improvement. There are clear reasons as to why we're not great. I don't know. Maybe things aren't so bad. Should we move on? Yeah, anything to add to that post?
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think by the end of the season, and again, as we've been saying all these same things, but by the end of the season, if we find a core nine and stick with them, we'll build some chemistry. People get in a rhythm. It can be completely different than it is right now. But just looking at that right now, it gives you some insight to why we might have been struggling a bit.
Yeah, it was a timely post by that user. Moving on to another post by user Leroy Browntown. They write, posted this in another thread, feel it should be said in regards to the trade player exception. They go on to say, We need to understand that Denny and the Seas can do more with the TPE in the offseason. Knowing this and seeing that this team is in no way competing this year against some of the current teams in the league, blah, 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 blah. So question to you guys, do you still feel like the TPE should be used this season, or do you think it could be better used in the offseason? And if so, what kind of moves do you envision in the offseason using the TPE?
As far as like off-season moves are concerned, I really wouldn't have a clue, if I'm perfectly honest. But I mean, I'm torn between, you know, two schools of thought. There's one that's there's one that's like, let's have a swing, let's try and like, you know, get somebody that's going to make an impact now, and let's start like building on that for next year. But I mean, if you like really zoom out and see the bigger picture, like I reckon it doesn't matter really who we get now. We're not getting past Brooke. Like, not really. So, and then, you know, even if we don't fall, even if we, like, you know, get them in the finals, then you probably have to go past Philly. And I don't think we're getting past Philly either. So I think there needs to be an acceptance of we are who we are. Obviously, we need to get better. We still need to be competitive. I don't want to face a fucking play-in game against, like, the Hornets and lose to a Gordon Hayward putback or anything. You know, that's something I can do without. So I want to be better now, absolutely. But as far as
fuck,
you
know, that
I think this is probably
sorry,
yeah, Danny oh Ainge is yeah, sorry for putting that thought in your head.
I'm never gonna be able to get that out of my mind.
Playing basketball would be pretty fun. Let's face it, we'll be up against the Hawks and the Knicks and the Wizards, the Hornets, shit. No, so I want it to be used on the right person. If that right person isn't available now, so be it. You know, I think most people would ride if we didn't do something to shake up the roster now. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's got to be used on the right person, and whoever that ends up being, I don't know.
I think it's hard to say who will be available after in the off season, but because of the timing of everything with the shortened season, I think we're able to use it. I'm pretty sure we're able to use it during the trade deadline. During the draft, and we're able to use it in the first part of free agency. So It opens up a whole bunch of possibilities that we can probably talk about at that point in the podcast. But in the short term, I mean, there's still options. Reddit user Prestige Worldwide pointed out, I hadn't realized this, but the Kings had lost 7 in a row. It's now 8 in a row. The Kings have lost, fallen way out of the playoff picture for now. And so they might be looking to finally move Harrison Barnes, which is, you know, everyone's favorite talents here. And supposedly he's looked at the Kings subreddit. I haven't checked it myself, but a lot of them were interested in Aaron Nesmith. So I mean, we've been kind of showcasing Aaron Nesmith. Is that something we want to do? Maybe. Maybe. So, I mean, there's going to be opportunities with TPE, and even without the TPE, we were talking about this on our thread. You know, you can put together a pretty sizable chunk of salary by including Tristan Thompson with players. Like, you could include Thompson with Tice, you take back like $15, $18 million. Or, I mean, you could go as far as to include, it's not, you know, brace yourself, but you could include Marcus Smart and Tristan Thompson. you could take back guys that are making like well into like the mid 20s without even touching the TPE. So if there's a guy, you know, there was a rumor supposedly that the Mavericks were entertaining the idea of trading Porzingis, who is obviously a massive injury concern. But that was one of my first posts, was asking, you know, maybe would you be open to trading Kemba for him? Would you be open to trading a package around Smart and Thompson? Could we intrigue them with that? I mean, there's so many things that Ainge could do, and hopefully he finally does something, because it clearly does seem like we need to do something.
Yeah, I kind of like, thank God for the TPE, right? Because what would we be talking about if we didn't have that potential looming? Like, there's so many spicy options, and it's a little bit, it's almost like NBA 2K, where like there's so many trade options available, there's so many possibilities, and we talk about it every week. And I don't think that that's a problem. Like, I don't think that it's boring to repeatedly talk about the various options available to us. And, you know, as these trade rumors start to emerge, you mentioned Kristaps Porzingis is the latest one, that we can do this deep dive into, like, you know, whether or not we'd want them on this team, who would we be willing to give up for them, and cap space is like never an issue because we've got this 28.5 mil cushion. Obviously, there's a hard cap problem there, but we've got some bigger salary like Smart, like Tristan Thompson to include to avoid those issues. I don't know. I guess I'm very thankful for the TPE. Obviously, you know, unlike Gordon Hayward, TPE is not putting up stats. You know, the win shares, the defensive win shares are not, you know, apparent for the TPE, but they're still providing content and entertainment for us. So pause for a moment and appreciate the TPE.
Better Volk than Jeff Teague, put it that way.
Yeah.
there's one point I think that's worth mentioning, Ben, which is that if you are thinking about the off season, so my understanding is that you normally have a year to use the TPE. I don't know if that's changed because of the lockout short or the COVID shortened season. That was something that like Danger Cart kind of touched on in a previous podcast where there's kind of these cryptic rules around the timing of things. But my understanding is that we have until, I think we made that trade in November, late November, November 29th, where we actually moved Hayward. So I think we have until November 29th, 2021, which would be like past the point of free agency. So what's interesting is that like, if someone like DeMar DeRozan, who's in the final year of his contract, or even someone like LaMarcus Aldridge or any of these guys who are actually free agents, I think you could potentially work out a sign-in trade and utilize a TPE to absorb that salary. So that opens you up to being, mm-hmm. being able to basically offer the money that we didn't give to Hayward to any free agents coming up here. So that's kind of an interesting thing that I don't think really anyone's really touched on too much, but that's the kind of flexibility that maybe it makes sense to wait so that you can actually really choose who you want to go after.
Yeah, and you know, this season is a weird one, and I think it feels like there's some urgency to make a move now, but in, you know, 2 to 5 years' time, we might look back in hindsight and think it made sense for Ainge and Co. to wait until there was more stable ground to make a move, when we could have had a better idea of you know, what the playing field would look like and whether we'd have crowds in our arena in TD Garden and things like that. Like, maybe eventually it will make sense for Ainge to have waited. I think at this point, though, fans are just champing at the bit for anything to be done to give us a better, you know, a better chance of winning. Let's move on, though, and thank you to Leroy Browntown for bringing out, you know, more TPE content. We obviously can't get enough of it here. This is by a user he called Game, and they write about The Curse of IT. It's a post titled The Curse of IT, a short retrospective. And in summary, it's a very long post and I highly recommend going to read it. I'm actually going to link it in the show notes for this podcast because it's a very well written, very well thought out post. They go on to say, the Celtics have been ass. Ever since Brad Stevens, the Celtics had been this scrappy underdog team who constantly overachieved, but at a certain point, they became the opposite. Front-running, perennial disappointments. From chemistry to kinked up, from doggedness to lackadaisical insipidness. This is the curse of IT. If you trace it all back, this run of insidious bad luck starts the summer when we traded for IT. Now, I'm going to summarize the key points of this post here because it is quite long, but it's a very good and very entertaining read, so please don't take my summary for it. Go and read the post. They go on to write, the IT trade in the summer of 2017, it was the right move, but the optics were terrible. The curse of IT then starts out with a bang. The very first 5 minutes of the very first game of the 2017-2018 season, marquee free agent signing Gordon Hayward suffers a gruesome ankle injury. Truly, it was an omen of what was to come. Kyrie gets injured, but the young Celtics with Rozier, Smart, Brown, and Tatum make it to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals against the LeBron's Cavs, but alas, 'twas all but the cruel tease of promise. This marked the last game that the Celtics would play inspired basketball. The curse of IT is poetic like that. The 18-19 season is marred with dysfunction. There's no chemistry. Kyrie thinks the earth is flat and butchers the usage of words and common expressions. Hayward is back, but not really. He won't be back. He won't be back until the year 2021 on a $120 million contract with the Charlotte Hornets. Rozier and Morris and everyone else wants theirs, and frustration abounds. The Celtics flop hard, losing 4-1 in the second round to the Bucks. That team was stacked. What a shame. The next season, Kyrie Irving leaves. Good fucking riddance. Horford leaves, Morris leaves, and we outsmart ourselves, sniffing out Matisse Thybulle from Philly with the 20th pick, but promptly trade him for Carson Edwards and the 24th pick, which we use to dump Baines, which sucks fucking balls, mm-hmm. on 5 whole levels. Number 1, we trade defensive savant Matisse Thybulle. Number 2, we draft Carson, sorry, not Eddie House Edwards. Number 3, we lose a solid-ass player in Aaron Baines. Number 4, the Baines salary dump allows us to get Kemba, who is, while not in the beginning of the end, a crucial catalyst to propel us to that end. And number 5, having the option of getting Kemba allows us to let go of Rozier, who is now a certified killer with the Hornets. The 1920 season, things are seemingly looking better, but the curse of IT is low-key like that. Hayward is so close to being back, but at any time he gets close to being back, he gets re-injured. Tatum's an all-star. Jaylen just misses out. Smart is all defense. The team is close, but they never quite get there. They never hit that stride. Kemba gets a four-month rest for his knee when COVID hits, but he was never right in the bubble. He never quite got back to his prior bubble level. Hayward gets injured again. The Celtics beat a dysfunctional Philly team and an annoying Raptors team in the playoffs. They then get manhandled by Bam Adebayo and torched by Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero to lose dismally 4-2. It's not merely losing the series, it's the way they lost. Some 4-0s feel like 4-2s, and some 4-2s feel like 4-0s. This was that case. The one player I was proud of, this user goes on to say, in that series was Brad Wanamaker, who is now gone. But if Brad Wanamaker is the brightest point of that series, you know the curse of IT is going strong. Here we are now almost halfway through the 2021 season, and the dysfunction has peaked. Now, I'm going to stop here because we're all too aware of the dysfunction of this season, so I'm not going to recount what this user has gone on to say there. But user He Called Game ends with, maybe the mix is just wrong. Then that's on Ainge. You know what else is on Ainge? Trading motherfucking Isaiah Thomas. Karma is real and as cold as what wrought it. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the cure is. How can we reverse the curse? I think we've all talked about, that's the end of that post, and that's a bad summary of it, so I highly recommend going to read it. But we have talked about this, and I know Joe has talked about this a lot on the podcast as well, that the curse of IT does seem like a turning point when you think of all of the bad fortune that has come since that trade. So assuming you guys believe in that as well, how do you feel that we can repent for the curse of IT? Larbird.
Well, Jesus. Okay.
Go.
Well, yeah, it was a bad look. I wasn't happy with it. I've shared this on Reddit, and I'm not totally comfortable with it. But in the off season, following the trade, and we had signed Gordon Hayward. I had actually, this is October 12th, 2017. It's before the season started. And I had messaged Scott. I've shared screen captures of this.
I love this.
I said to him, I said, man, has there ever been a more devastating free agent signing than Grant Hill to the Magic? Dude was way better than Gordon Hayward. Plays four games his first year, then 14, then 29, then zero. How bummed would you be if that's how many games Hayward played here? And then, like, a week later, Hayward has a... Yeah, just to add to that, like, in August, prior to that, I had said to him, man, I said, what would be worse, a season-ending Kyrie or injury or a season-ending Tatum injury on opening night? So it was already in the back of my mind that we were fucked and that we were going to be cursed. And then the Grant Hill, Gordon Hayward one actually ends up happening, like, a week later.
Yeah.
So... as far as the curse goes, I feel like we paid our fucking dues, man. We've had the last three seasons of missing Gordon Hayward. It was devastating. All this shit that happened with, you know, Kyrie and everything. We paid our dues. The basketball gods, they appropriately smote us or smited us. I'm not sure the past tense of smite, but we paid our dues. And I think it's time that they give us a little love. So, I'm out on the Isaiah curse. Love Isaiah. Met him in person once, got his autograph. Great dude. Lives out here in Seattle. You know, it's time to move on. Let's have some basketball love again. Let's also point out this is the franchise that had Len Bias die and Reggie Lewis die. Mm-hmm. We paid our dues for many, 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 many years. It's time for us to have a little bit of positivity here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jackson, what do you think?
I think I don't know if we would have compounded the curse, but let's just say we traded Jaylen Brown and a bunch of others for James Harden. And then he comes in and we start looking more like, you know, Brooklyn Nets do now too. Like I don't think people would be saying that would be a bad move. It resulted in more winning, which it most definitely would have. But it's okay. when you put it in perspective, it does, it does get a little bit eerie, but yeah, I mean, that 17-18 season, particularly the playoff run, I know we lost Hayward and I know Kyrie was injured as well too, but you know, my most fondest memory of my short-lived Celtics fandom was that playoff run. And yeah, it was a tease and everything like that. You know, you could add to that too, but you know, it would have been more indicative if we just sucked flat out and we just missed the playoffs like every single year since. So I think it's a bit cherry-picky-ish when it comes to that, because you know, the last 3 years, I mean, that one Kyrie season again, the second one that's been brought up again, you know, I've loved supporting the Celtics. You know, it's been great. And I think if we had maxed IT or if we had not made that trade, then, you know, who knows how it would have turned out too. But like, you know, it's like, oh man, you could have had Kyrie Irving instead. You know, you just kept like, you know, broken ass Isaiah Thomas. You know, it was the right possible move to make. But you know, as far as fixing is concerned, I don't know. Maybe Taco Fall can fucking, you know, summon some demon with this big, you know, like, you know, ritualistic, you know, effigy burning on whenever the TD Garden opens back up. I don't know. I'm open to trying whatever it is, but I mean, yeah, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure what to say about the curse.
I think we've got time for one more. This is by user JackJ98, and it's a tweet by Sham Sharania. The Houston Rockets are releasing DeMarcus Cousins, sources tell The Athletic. And the reason that this is worth bringing up is because there are quite a number of Celtics fans who think that the Celtics are a chance for signing DeMarcus Cousins. Larbird, do you think, is there any impact for DeMarcus Cousins on the Seas? Do you think he has any desire to play for the Celtics? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, he's been pretty bad, but his last game, he actually was pretty good. So, you know, maybe he's in that Kemba Walker bucket where he's working himself back into shape after missing a pretty significant chunk of time. You know what the most interesting thing to me about the Cousins thing is? The main reason why most people didn't want him, a lot of people wanted him when he was actually good, but a lot of people didn't. And the main reason was because they saw him as this huge... just huge, like, head case, like locker room cancer. I thought it was interesting going to the Rockets subreddit and seeing their reaction to this news, because it was pretty much unanimously, what the fuck? He's a great locker room guy. He's a great veteran, great locker room guy. It was like one after another of people saying how great he was as a locker room guy and has been like a mature adult over there. So much so that I actually like commented. I'm like, are you guys like being ironic? And they're like, no, he's been awesome here. So I don't know. Maybe he's actually a perfect example of a low risk, high reward guy that you could bring in. Maybe after you move someone like Thompson for a wing, right? So maybe if you use Thompson and stuff to bring in Harrison Barnes, and then maybe you bring in Cousins to be our third big. I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah, I'm not against it either. Yeah. It's intriguing. You know, you want him to be the guy that he was in Sacramento, and less so much the guy he's been the last few years. But I mean, shit. I mean, I think if it's a low risk thing, I mean, why not? You know,
I don't know. I'm against it personally. I just don't see him impacting the team in a positive way. You know, we've got our three man big lineup, and I think they all have clear roles. Like, there's a reason to start any one of those three, with the exception of Rob Williams. And you know, the Celtics have made it pretty clear that that's, you know, for health related reasons, that they're sort of dialing back his minutes or managing his minutes a little bit. I think they all have a pretty good role on the team, and introducing DeMarcus Cousins to that, I don't know. I think that just makes things more confusing for all of the players in the Celtics. And I think it's clear a lot of them are not quite comfortable in their roles. Otherwise, we'd be winning more games. And the introduction of DeMarcus Cousins to that, you know, despite his prior successes, I don't see the positive side of that.
Well, I wouldn't do it unless we made a move that included either Tice or Thompson.
Like, yeah,
if we
knew
one of those guys for wing help, then I could see bringing in someone to fill out our depth. And I wouldn't, like, that doesn't mean I'd start Cousins. I would see it as, this is a promotion for Time Lord to get more minutes as our backup big to whoever remains between Tyson Thompson. And then you have Cousins as kind of spot minutes. But over the course of the season, he could get healthy, and then that could be you could pay huge dividends. And if it's, you know, people need to remember, we're not talking about trading the farm for Cousins. We're talking about signing him to like a minimum contract. And then if it doesn't work out, you just cut him. Like, you give him like a non-guaranteed contract. So in that standpoint, yes, I wouldn't necessarily bring him in to be our fourth big. That wouldn't make a lot of sense. But a big picture type move, maybe that's a good follow-up move.
Mm. interesting times. Look, that is going to do it for this one. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in. The Celts are back on the court tomorrow, today, probably, by the time you're listening to this, for another emotional roller coaster against the Hawks. We will be back sometime in the next week. I know it's cliche, but please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and give us ratings and reviews and all of those little things that help us stand out from the crowd of other Celtics podcasts. Jackson, Larbird33, love your work, guys. Thanks again.
Likewise, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Until next time, go Celtics. Peace.